Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with Emily Reese. With co-curator David Kunian, she is the creator of a beautiful new book, New Orleans Music Observed, The Art of Noel Rockmore and Emily Reese. It accompanies an exhibit at the New Orleans Jazz Museum. We'll also be talking with John Ed Bradley, who wrote the long essay, Picture in a Picture, Noel Rockmore and Emily Reese in New Orleans, for the book. It is a great pleasure to welcome Emily Reese to The Reading Life. With co-curator David Kunian, she is the creator of a beautiful new book, New Orleans Music Observed, The Art of Noel Rockmore and Emily Reese, which accompanies an exhibit at the New Orleans Jazz Museum. We'll also be talking with John Ed Bradley, who wrote a long essay, Picture in a Picture, Noel Rockmore and Emily Reese in New Orleans, for the book. Emily, I'm so happy to welcome you to The Reading Life.
Oh, Susan, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
And John Ed, welcome back.
Thank you, Susan. Good to be with you again.
You're writing a lot these days. Now, Emily, first tell us a bit about the exhibit this book accompanied. How did it come together? And what did it mean to you to see so much great New Orleans work by both you and your father in one place?
Oh, my goodness. It all started with one painting, Bourbon Street Parade. Mm-hmm. In 2017, Greg Lambuzzi, the director of the museum, contacted me and said, "We've just acquired a very exciting, large artwork by your father, and we'd like you to see it." I walked into the museum. This was a private viewing. They had not put it on display yet. And I said, "You won't believe this, but I worked on that painting with him, albeit briefly, at the end of its genesis. But I did work on it with him not long after I had met him as a young adult."
And that
was in 1977.
Mm-hmm. That to me is like, and John Ed, feel free to chime in here, that painting to me is like one of those iconic Louisiana artworks. You know, I think of John McCready's painting of Huey Long being assassinated, and that's one of those great artworks that everyone associates with Louisiana.
Absolutely true.
But Bourbon Street Parade is another. It just captures such a moment and such a place, don't you think?
I do. It is populated by so many interesting things as well. It has people, it has pop culture characters, it has characters very unique to New Orleans, like Mardi Gras figures and musicians, of course, many musicians. And it's a piece of our history, mm-hmm. both as art and as historic content.
So, John Ed, do you remember the first time you saw that painting and what you thought of it?
I do. The first time I saw it was with Emily.
Ah.
And what I thought about was the year 1977 and how significant that was in her life and in her dad's life. 1977 would have been, Emily, tell me if this is right, it was the year after you first met your dad.
That is correct. I met him late in 1976.
1976. Emily's dad left his family, left Emily when she was 18 months old. And she did not see him again until she was 20. And she turned up on his doorstep in New York. And they left New York in 1977 and moved to the French Quarter. Her dad rented a large house on Orleans, and Emily painted mostly portraits of tourists at Jackson Square. It was quite an eventful time for her. I think, what was it, 10 months you were with your dad?
That's right. I arrived in February of 1977, actually maybe a month or so before he came down. He sent me ahead, and I got to stay with Gypsy Lou Webb, who is a French Quarter icon.
Yes.
And And that led to a remarkable thing, which was she said, you know, Emily, that wall outside of my room, which was in the skyscraper building, she said, it's so bare. Would you please paint something on it? I had never done a mural. I'd done a little bit of work with my dad already in New York on some of his murals. Well, I just invented something out of my imagination. And it was my father and Gypsy and me and other wonderful characters that I was meeting for the first time. And it's still there.
I know. That's such a
gift.
And
I got to restore it last year.
Oh, what a thrill.
It was a big thrill.
It's an iconic painting, and it's in an iconic French Quarter building, the old skyscraper at Royal and St. Peter. In the story I wrote about Emily, she was very forthcoming. She held nothing back, and she was quite confessional in our interviews. And she didn't hesitate when I asked her tough questions, and she was very candid about those 10 months with her dad. And it was an amazing thing to write about that. It had never been written before. We had these two great American artists living together. One of them was this young, beautiful girl who was quite inexperienced, and she was with this older man who was her dad, but who was losing his powers somewhat, I would say, at that point. He was deep into alcoholism, and he was quite abusive of Emily. It's miraculous that they stayed together as long as they did. He was also intensely jealous of her success at the square. She was making money, painting a lot of people, celebrated among her peers, and he started coming around and sort of stalking her. He would watch her from a distance and leer at her, and this went on for months, and she put up with it. And it's at the heart of this story I wrote about the two of them. And I read over the story again last night, and I was just so impressed that Emily let me share that, you know, with her audience, with her fans, with her collectors. She's a remarkable person. She's a great artist, but she's a remarkable woman.
Well, I wanted people, if I may interject, I wanted people who know me, and some also know my dad, and then there are lots of people who know my dad and his work and didn't know me. I wanted them to know that there was a family heritage of art, that his parents were very successful, accomplished artists, and yet I didn't know any of these people. I didn't know my father. I didn't know the grandparents. It's through the art that I got to know my family tree, if you will. And that's very profound to me, because it's why the art matters so much to me, even more simply than the art. It's also that it's my gateway to the people.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Emily Reese, whose new book is New Orleans Music Observed, The Art of Noel Rockmore and Emily Reese. Well, your story is such a story of overcoming the odds, because your father wasn't the only one who was discouraging of you. Your mother, you said, tried to virtually expunge art from your life and was not at all supportive of your ambitions.
Not at all.
So what gave you the courage to keep on going?
I'm not sure. I think I was just fortunate that there was some germ of courage inside of me that didn't get crushed and that enabled me to rise up and fight back. If not literally, then specifically through the art. And perhaps I could say that the art was a refuge and the art was a place that I could go to where they couldn't touch me.
Well, I love these stories of the support you got, like when you were working for Smith Corona, I think. You work for Master Charge, Smith Corona. You had these interesting
day jobs. Some big
corporations,
yes.
And you had one boss who thought so much of your work that he said you could paint at your desk.
They were tiny watercolors.
They were little.
But still, I was a very efficient secretary, and so I often would complete my duties a bit early, but I had to be there at my desk. And so I just started fiddling around, noodling with some things, and he didn't mind. So, of course, it expanded.
So, John Ed, how did you two meet? I want to hear that story.
I met her over the phone probably 12 years ago. I was writing a story for Garden and Gun magazine about her dad called The Tomb of Rockmore. Mm-hmm. And she was on a list of people I hoped to speak with. I got her on the phone, and she was terrific. I thought she was brilliant, and I really wanted to get to know her. And she and her husband, John, visited New Orleans, and I met them. We became friends, and we just remained friends. And, you know, we love art, and we kind of, I don't know, we had much in common. And I thought she was great. And I just thought she needed encouragement and time to find herself, and she really found herself in the city. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought she had this destiny awaiting her. You know, this people were afraid to tell her that, but I did. I encouraged her to move to New Orleans, and she and John moved, and she quickly built a fan base, and I introduced her to collectors. I introduced her to John Clemmer. John loved her. She thought she was great. He loved her work, and he loved her. So that's how we met. It was I rarely follow up. You know, I interview a lot of people, and I rarely maintain relationships. I usually go the other way. But with Emily, I really wanted to know her, and I wanted to be in her life in any way I could. I'm so glad I did. I'm so thrilled for her. This book is fantastic.
It is. There's so much about not just the art, but the music. I mean, it's about the whole big ball of it, you know, our culture.
Her dad was the subject of a monograph published by LSU Press, I think in 1968.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Preservation Hall Portraits. And it's a classic. It is a classic. And I'm confident that she has produced a classic in her book. I mean, it's just fun to look at. It's unbelievably beautiful. You know, there's something on every page to hold your attention. It's another art object. She's very creative. Everything, she can't make a bad picture, and I knew she couldn't make a bad book. It's a great book.
Oh, thank you, John. I appreciate that. You know, it all started with the exhibition.
Right.
David Kunian did the curation completely by himself. I had no role to play in the development of the exhibition. But from the beginning of when the museum talked to me about the exhibition, I said, well, I would like to do a book. I knew that they didn't have the resources to produce a book, and I thought, I really would like to commit to doing that myself. And that's, in fact, what I did. And so working in tandem with David Kunian and getting from him, of course, all the information that he had built up to produce the exhibition, and then I hired a photographer to accompany me to the museum multiple times so that we could photograph every item that's in the exhibition, photograph the rooms, the setting. And then, of course, I hired John Ed. And I said, John Ed, I need you. You are the person to write the biographical story that will introduce me and my father as a entity to the world, because we had not been written about before in a serious way, or not really. I mean, what John Ed has done is a groundbreaking introduction.
And we should also say that there are wonderful interviews by Gwen Tompkins of Music Inside Out with artists who've been drawn.
That was something that I thought of very early in the process as being a necessary component for the book. Mm-hmm. I thought, here are two artists, my dad and me, who in different generations have worked with musicians. Both of us worked from life a lot, meaning that we had the musicians in our studios and also worked live. My dad only in Preservation Hall, me all around town, but in different eras, the 1960s for my father and for me, the contemporary scene. And I thought, well, if I were a person seeing a book or seeing this exhibition, I'd be wondering, what are the musicians thinking? Uh-huh. And I thought, well, who better than Gwen Tompkins to interview a select group of people.
And so many of them express such gratitude that you share your proceeds from this work with them.
Well, I do. I started doing that from the very beginning. The very first picture that I sold was of Luke Winslow King and Esther Rose, and they were surprised when I showed up at their gig and say, hey, I sold that picture, and gave them a little money.
I think that's very generous. We should all be doing that, I think, sometimes. I'm speaking with John Ed Bradley, a contributor to the book, New Orleans Music Observed, The Art of Noel Rockmore and Emily Reese. John Ed, we first see Emily in this book through your eyes, and she's working on a drawing of Ellis Marsalis the night of his final performance at Snug Harbor. So you describe that scene so vividly, so set that scene for us and describe Emily at work.
Emily arrived 2 hours before the set was set to begin. I think it was an 8 p.m. start. I was with her. We went in, and everybody knew her. You know, that's one thing that struck me immediately. Everybody knew her and loved her. And the maitre d' brought her to a table in the rear of the dining area, and she sat with her back to the room so she could watch through a door at the kitchen workers, who all seemed to know her as well. And we started talking, and she talked about her dad and her life, you know, her story. We were there probably 2 hours when she said, it's time to go, and let's go into where the music was. And we went into this room, and there was this little bitty table, and we sat there. I'm a big guy, and she's a little lady, you know, and we're sitting by this little bitty table, and she started pulling out her tools, the tools of her trade, a sketchbook, ink pen. She put gloves on. She wears gloves when she draws and paints. And so then Marsalis came in, and he had a walker, and he was, you know, he's elderly and probably in poor health, and he got up to the stage, thunderous applause. Emily had this laser focus on the guy, you know, and she had a cocktail. I had one, and I sat there and absorbed the music and watched him, and I watched her and took notes while she made these drawings. But they're more than drawings. They're closer to watercolor, probably. I think Emily would do a better job of describing just what they are. But it was fascinating, you know, this great musician on the stage, this great artist next to me. It was an incredible night, and it was right before COVID ruined everything, you know, for the local scene. And you know, Marsalis would die from COVID.
Right.
April 1st, you know, 2020.
Well, I look back on it, and it was like a dream, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful dream. And when it ended, this woman, I think she was from Chicago, approached Emily and asked about, wanted to see what she was doing. And, you know, there was a small crowd of people gathered around us who wanted to see the artwork. And, you know, they were gasped. Oohs and ahs when they saw what she had produced in that short time. It was fun. You know, it was fun mm-hmm. to be with her. She always dresses in interesting ways. You know, she wears funny little shoes. She covers her hands. And the thing I recall is the intensity of her focus when she was working. It was really something to see.
Well, you always have such respect for the rituals of artists, John. That always comes through in everything you write about them.
I do. I love artists. For much of my career, I wrote about football stars. And mm-hmm. I wrote for Sports Illustrated, and I wrote for GQ and Esquire, the Washington Post. And a lot of that was sports writing. You know, for me, it was my job, and I worked hard at it. But I've always had this reverence for artists, for the creative souls among us. You know, I know what it takes and what they have to give and what they sacrifice. The first thing they give up is any promise of ever making money at it.
Right.
So there's this insecurity that goes along with the work. And so I identify with that because I'm a novelist as well as a journalist, and I know what it's like to struggle. And so I have this feeling for artists. I had an uncle who was an artist, and I just identify with what they're trying to do. And I admire Emily so much. You know, I've been around a lot of artists. I've interviewed many dozens of them. She's special. You know, she's got the goods. She can deliver the picture, but she's also a wonderful human being. And considering what she had to overcome, mm-hmm. you know, with her family, it's remarkable who she is today.
So what is it the two of you want people to take away from this exhibit and the book combined? I mean, there's so much of value in the book that is so gorgeous. And books last. We hope the exhibit will last forever, too.
Well, I'd like to say that it's an art book.
Yes.
First and foremost, it's a book in which people will get to see lots and lots of art by my father and by me, and not only the art that is in the exhibition, as if that weren't enough, and it is quite
it's a
enough.
Lot.
It's fantastic. But I decided to expand in the book upon the exhibition, and so in the story that John Ed wrote, I populated it with lots of photographs and artworks that many people will have never seen before.
Mm-hmm. And so they'll have the thrill of discovery.
Yes.
Which you want always.
Absolutely.
Although, I find myself terribly drawn to those photographs of the objects.
Yes.
In an exhibit like that. You know, that old thing of the hand that touched the hand. You know, you see the used sousaphone, or you see the treasured hat, or the walking stick, or something
or
like that.
Or one of my favorites, the 1927 vase. Crafted by hand by Alcide Pavago.
Oh, yes.
Incredible.
What a treasure.
Yes, or the bazook, the
kazoot
by
Danny
Barker.
That made me smile and laugh
out loud.
Thank
you for bringing up all the artifacts and instruments that that David Koenig chose to accompany mm-hmm. the art. And he did a beautiful job of pairing items
oh, yes.
to artwork.
Wise choices. Well, one of the great things about it is that it has art from every angle. You know, the creator, the collector, the curator.
That's right.
You know, the person writing about art as well. There's
very true.
Even appropriately and wonderfully a playlist for each room in this exhibit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can have that musical experience in your head while you're enjoying the book, which I always adore.
Well, David Koenig created the playlists mm-hmm. for the exhibition rooms.
Right.
And so when I realized that there would be pictures of the rooms in the catalog part of the book, chapter 2, I thought, you know, we've got to have the playlists that
it's
David
perfect.
Had compiled. Because when people visit the exhibition, and the exhibition, by the way, is on view still at the Jazz Museum, 400 Esplanade, until November 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear the music.
And you see the art. It's just magical. We've been talking with Emily Rees and John Ed Bradley about the beautiful new book, New Orleans Music Observed, The Art of Noel Ruckmore and Emily Rees. You can meet them Friday, November 5th from 6 to 8 at the New Orleans Jazz Museum at 4000 Esplanade. It's free and open to the public, and this event includes a conversation between curators, Emily and exhibit curator David Koenig. Check out NOLAJazzMuseum.org for ticket info and COVID precautions. Emily, it was such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
John Ed, always a blast.
Thank you, Susan. Appreciate it.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. And just a reminder, with evolving COVID restrictions, best to check with venues before attending in-person events and be sure to mask up. In New Orleans, Tyler Bridges discusses his book, The Flight, A Father's War, A Son's Search, Monday, November 1st at 6 at Octavia Books. Deborah Shriver signs her book, The French Leave, From Paris to Orleans Parish, November 2nd from 6 to 8 at the Cabildo. Blake Sands discusses and signs the boundaries of their dwelling at an artist-in-residence event Wednesday, November 3rd, from 6 to 7:30 at the Chloe Hotel in New Orleans. Kent Babb discusses and signs Across the River, Life, Death, and Football in an American City with sports writer Jeff Duncan, Thursday, November 4th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Mask and proof of vaccination or a negative PCR test are required. Emily Reese discusses and signs New Orleans Music Observed, The Art of Noel Rockmore and Emily Reese, and appears in conversation with curator David Kunian. Friday, November 5th at 6 at the New Orleans Jazz Museum, 400 Esplanade Avenue. The Louisiana Book Festival goes virtual this year, October 30th through November 13th, with new and free content every weekend. Go to louisianabookfestival.org for the complete schedule. Among the authors set to appear are Louisiana Writer Award winner Fatima Sheikh, State Poet Laureate Mona Lisa Saloy, James Gill, Howard Hunter, Ricky Lee Jones, Alicia Long, Josh Prager, Stephen V. Roberts, Maurice Carlos Ruffin, and many more. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellas Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.